Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and my role here is to adjust the studio lighting to bring out the best aspects of Jonathan's complexion.
Which you do remarkably well every
Thank
time,
you.
May I say. So this week we're looking at how to drive procurement in a rapid and high-growth industry.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe.
And to help us, our guest started his career as a journalist but quickly pivoted into business and commercial law. He has a background in strategy and finance and moved into procurement some years ago. He has worked for many years in the energy sector. He is the former CPO for Green Cargo, where he built an entire procurement function during the pandemic, and has been head of procurement consultancy and training for Silk Competence. He has previously been on this show in a former role and now joins us in a different role. Now he is director of procurement for At North. At North is a rapidly growing data center company in the Nordic regions that are building and operating data centers and infrastructure. They have a presence in Iceland, Denmark, Sweden, and Finland, and are moving into Norway. And they're building and powering the next data infrastructure for the future. Please give a warm welcome back to The Procurement Show for Andreas Takas. Andreas, thank you so much for coming on again.
Yes.
Second time.
Hello. Andreas, on your behalf, I'm going to ask Jonathan, does Andreas get anything special for coming back on?
Yes, one of those special gold trophies
that
you were going to have made.
There you go.
So, I mean, what's different about your being on the show this time is now you're in one of the biggest growth sectors. So what does procurement look like? What is different if you're in a really big, high growth sector?
First of all, thank you for having me back to the studio, and the pleasure is entirely on my side. Coming back to the question, I would say that definitely, yes, it is different compared to other industries. And I think that is, in this industry, is much more focus on lead times and cash flow, as well as the usual efficiencies and so forth, but perhaps more leaning towards lead times and cash flow than compared to cost savings and so on.
This is really interesting because on my script here, Jonathan's put the word sloshing, which is a technical term for when there's a lot of money around. Because I guess in your kind of growth sector, funds are very able and available. So when you're in that kind of industry, that kind of sector where cost is not necessarily the ultimate goal for procurement, I guess the question is, what does procurement need to do?
Does it need to do anything?
Does it need to do anything? Yeah. You could just go out to lunch.
No, well, I wish. But yeah, absolutely right. And as I said before, so that cost reduction is not the sole priority. I mean, it's actually not the sole priority in any industry. But the real focus is on achieving long-term value while balancing what I would say the trifecta of lead times, cash flow, and strong supplier relationships. And we also play a key role in ensuring sustainability and resilience in the supply chain. So the objective is to create partnerships that support both immediate growth and our long-term commitments.
So do you therefore think, Jonathan, that if you've got that barrier removed, the function can therefore better concentrate on the more ethical aspects of procurement?
Well, I think that's one of the consequences. But I think also Andreas alluded to it just then. It's about how do you make sure you've got those right supply relationships and you've got that right resilience of supply? Because now, especially when we work with procurement teams, it's all about we need cash, we need savings, we need money now. And everybody's just putting out the fires, kind of not even doing the good procurement stuff because they're too busy putting out the fires. Once you've dealt with that stuff, you can focus on what good procurement really looks like, which is about how do you drive sustainability? How do you have the right relationships? How do you get innovation from your supply base? And how do you make sure that you're really planning for the future? So it's so refreshing. I can't imagine what that would be like because every time I work with a company, they always need savings.
Yes.
So that led me to think about how fast procurement is moving. Everything's changing at lightning speed at the moment, not just in terms of tech and AI, just what's happening in procurement, what we're focusing on. So if you're in a high growth sector, does that mean that you abandon the traditional procurement approaches and sort of go straight to this future world of doing things differently? Or is the traditional stuff still part of what you're doing?
Jonathan, unlike many older, more established industries at North and the data center sector, we are not burdened by legacy processes and outdated ways of working. It gives us a sort of agility to focus on what truly matters and act quick. And we can apply modern thinking in procurement and sourcing and whatever we call it. Taking a straightforward approach, focusing on value creation over rigid conformity.
So, Jonathan...
That's refreshing.
It is. And you also mentioned in your question earlier about tech.
Yeah.
You must be adopting alternative technologies, new ways of working in order to achieve this. So what kind of technological solutions are on your shopping list, as it were?
Yeah.
Well, that's always an interesting question, isn't it? So we've just implemented an entire new ERP system and currently implemented purchase orders and e-invoices and so on. And this is not really radical in itself, but I think there is a big difference compared to what I've experienced before. And it is that we, that is procurement, don't have to sell ourselves so much internally, go begging for a piece of the cake, so to speak. It's clear to everybody that we're heavily dependent on our suppliers, and this must be coordinated and structured. And of course, this requires a lot of tech to add value, but also without building a lot of overheads.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
In 1939, Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard, two Stanford electrical engineering graduates, started their company in a one-car garage. Their first product was an audio oscillator, and their first customer was Walt Disney Productions, which purchased 8 oscillators for the movie Fantasia. The garage, now a historical landmark, served as their research lab, workshop, and manufacturing facility for nearly a year before they expanded.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the first choice for advanced procurement and negotiation training.
So that leads me on to the next question. And I know it's early in the podcast to do this, but I think the time has come.
Oh, no. You're not going to mention those digits.
To mention AI.
You had to go there, didn't you?
And how can AI help? So my dog's doing AI still. I've tried to stop it. You know, we've got to talk about AI. How can it help the company grow? But more importantly, what's the role of AI to make procurement the value function for the future that it needs in this growth industry?
Yeah, this is actually rather funny, or perhaps even a little bit ironic, because, I mean, we must remember that AI in itself is one of the driving forces, or even main driving forces, behind the intense growth we are seeing in our industry.
Yeah.
But for us, or for procurement in the industry, AI can be a real value add because of our massive dependency on suppliers, as I mentioned before, and that it enables us to gather and analyze market intelligence more efficiently, streamline and even automate processes, and managing increasing volumes, and, you know, without the usual growth in adding new people always to the processes. So, yeah, AI helps procurement play a much more strategic role.
So, let me get this right. AI is helping you buy the stuff that does the AI.
So that's, ooh.
That's AI helping AI.
AI.
Let's
that's
not go
kind
there.
Of like a bit of a cyclic thing there. When it comes to moving forward with making buying decisions, purchasing decisions, procurement, when you're in this kind of area of not necessarily having the barriers that traditional choices have, do you have to still follow the normal checks, you know, like governance, balances, all the traditional stuff, red tape, I guess, is a particular thing that a lot of organizations and individuals have to encounter. Can you just bypass that because you're in such a growth sector? It doesn't really matter.
Yes and no. I mean, there is always the need for compliance and so on. So we can't round the corners too much. But I think it's what we definitely can see is that it is a very trust-based culture, very, very qualified culture. We are very advanced when it comes to design, engineering, etc. And it's usually better to act and later ask for forgiveness. And the company also has a greater risk aptitude. So perhaps the answer compared to other companies and older industries, then perhaps the answer would actually be yes. But there comes a lot of responsibility into it as well.
We previously had Guy Strafford on this podcast where we talked about how fast procurement's moving, also some of the risks that AI bring to the future of procurement. So given everything's changing so quickly, I'm interested in what your view is on where you think procurement is going to be. What does it look like at North in, say, 3 years? You know, what will be different in 3 years' time?
If we look at the core to start with, and then I mean the supply of goods and services, then it will definitely look pretty much the same. We must remind ourselves that trade will always continue and it's not so dependent on how we organize it. But then when we look at the procurement function, it will be much more strategic and less to zero, tactical, operational. And then with a proper guiding framework, it is easy to execute much of the procurement work, negotiations and tenders and so also. And I think that the procurement department or the procurement professional will not be involved in every step in the same way as we've done before and in older industries. But the effect will always be there and also actually improved. So less people dependent, but quality probably better.
Good answer.
You say people. Let's talk about people, actually, because they say an organization is only as strong as the people that run it and are behind it. So what have you done differently, in particular with regards to the traditional things like talent acquisition, personal development, and also motivating the team?
I'm not so sure that I've done it so differently, but it's vital to understand the importance of super fast growth for success in this industry. And it means that anyone who joins my team must be highly flexible and at the same time, totally dependable, which are actually two of our at North's core values. And one needs to hit the ground running, start delivering from day one. And I also think personally, that's very important in this situation, that has a quick thinking, creativity, and an entrepreneurial spirit. So differently, done differently, perhaps I've selected differently. I don't know.
Okay.
I love the phrase hit the ground running because I can tell you now, whenever Jonathan goes running, he definitely hits the ground.
But I'm just not running anymore.
No.
Just make it a large thud. No. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Strategic thinking, category management, negotiation, SRM, sustainable procurement.
Imagine if the skill set your team needs could happen at the flick of a switch. At Positive Purchasing, we have 22 years' experience in building advanced procurement and negotiation capability. With our unique skills assessment and tailored learning and development programs, it's no wonder we're the partner of choice for big companies the world over. Ready to switch on procurement capability that makes an impact in your business? Contact Positive Purchasing today to find out how.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan O'Brien.
So what about the sort of staples, the things that make really good strategic procurement work today? Category management, supply relationship management, you know, advanced supply chain management. Are those still things that you do? Are they relevant within a high growth industry?
Oh, yes, Jonathan, you can be certain on that. Both category management and SRM are both integral to the procurement process and important. But of course, at the same time, we've developed and deployed it differently and streamlined it much more to support our need for speed.
And I guess a sort of follow-on question from that is, do you get held back by the kind of, this is how we do things, or, you know, we don't do that here, or, you know, save your energy, I heard they tried it in this other company and it failed miserably. All those classic sort of resistance to change things that you get when you're trying to do change. Is that something that you come across, or is everybody going, oh, we're charging off into the horizon?
It's an interesting question, Jonathan. Well, we don't have the heavy legacy processes that I've seen slowing down many organizations. We do benefit from having many seasoned experts with deep industry knowledge and so forth. So no, I wouldn't say that we are being held back or we don't do that here or so on. But at the same time, yeah, perhaps we need to just dig deeper sometimes.
Mm, yeah.
I'd like to have the opportunity to geek out a bit, if I may. I'm the kind of person who scans the internet for pictures of data centers and looks at them thinking, ooh,
that's not what I saw in your statistics. We shouldn't go there.
I just think they're amazing things. They've just got everything that technology from floor to ceiling. That must present its own challenges, really, buying for that kind of thing at that kind of volume, because you're talking about energy, because you need to run it and also cool it. Therefore, you also natural resources like water, and I guess it creates its own heat. So perhaps that's part of the problem. So minerals, they're in short supply in occasions, and also the raw materials, the chips and that kind of stuff. So what sort of challenges do you face when you're buying within that particular industry at the particular levels you're experiencing?
As you know, Paul, electricity is a challenge and it kind of defines the entire industry at the same time. Sustainability and responsible operations is becoming mission critical in procurement of land for data center development operators like us, etc. So, I mean, we have to prove our energy efficiency and actively engage with local communities. And at the same time, we also need to balance with lead times and cash flow. So we must remember that the data center industry is really in a race. So where does that lead us? Yeah, it's a harder question. We just need to solve everything.
And just building on that, some of the things that you're buying are getting scarce. Everybody else is trying to buy the same things because everybody's building data centers right now. So what do you do when you're struggling and competing to try and get all the things that everybody else is getting and those products are getting scarcer and scarcer or harder to come by? You know, how do you handle that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right there, Jonathan. So what we can see is scarce or becoming scarcer, the long lead items or the heavy equipment and components. And you need to be very good at forecasting, planning, working closely together with your suppliers, so partnerships and so on. And it's down to what we've been talking about earlier in this show regarding lead times and so on. Mm-hmm. So you need to perhaps book production slots or sometimes even build up inventory or whatever. But you need to work very close with forecasting and also together with the suppliers.
And I guess the whole scarcity thing leads me on to thinking about scarcity of energy, which I know we've sort of touched on. But I saw a forecast this week that suggests that the amount of demand for power around the world to power AI-driven data centers is 30 to 35 gigawatts in the next few years, then getting up to 60 gigawatts, which is equivalent to 60 new nuclear power stations.
Yeah,
coming
there's
online.
Been a lot of news traffic about this lately. Yeah.
Nobody's building 60 nuclear power stations. So I guess if you think about the power that AtNorth's going to need to power the new data center for the future, does that mean that you then get into the make versus buy and say, well, let's just build our own power generation facility because we can't wait for it to be available?
Yeah, it's really funny to get that question because, as you know, I worked many years in the energy industry. And if we go back a few decades, the energy industry was actually talking about what to do with all the surplus energy. And that situation is gone and probably gone forever. And it differs between different countries and continents how to solve this problem. We can see, for example, in the US, they come quite far when it comes in small and medium-sized nuclear power stations and so on. We haven't seen that perhaps so much in Europe yet. When it comes to AtNorth, we are definitely looking into our reference design to include power generation facilities such as windmills and so on. Perhaps we won't own them, but they will be on our land. And I think also if we make a historical reflection, and I can refer at least to Sweden where I live, is that back in the days, the energy intensive industries like paper mills and so on, they built their own and owned their own hydropower plants. So they kind of secured their own need for energy. And even if we won't build hydropower plants in the future, simply because there's no more room for it, but definitely we need to consider the entire supply chain.
That is an incredibly interesting point, because even though it's a completely different technology, it's not a situation that we've not seen historically before.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Noura Al-Mansouri from Doha in Qatar, who writes, "Dear Professor Jonathan..."
Oh, I'm liking the professor.
Right, creep. "I am a great admirer of your books and your posts."
Thank you.
Are you sure you didn't write this?
I could have been.
Yeah. "Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us."
Yeah.
Are you double sure you
did write that?
All right, then. Okay. "I have read your book on category management where you talk about the virtual brick wall." Mm-hmm. "Please, can you explain this?" Obviously, you didn't do it very well in the book. "Please, can you explain this and how it relates to a company that operates in the Middle East? Thank you so much."
Good. And that's clarification rather than it not being.
Okay, right, yes.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, thank you so much, Noura, for your question. So the virtual brick wall, the concept is, in procurement, historically, we're used to just buying stuff. That's what companies do. They buy stuff and that's what procurement does. But when you look at how goods flow through an organization, procurement's responsible for how we source things. So those goods flow in, they get transformed by the organization, and then they get passed to our end customer or providers, the services that we provide. So we've got the people that are sort of satisfying our end customers, and then we're doing the sourcing. Now, between those two things, it's like there's a virtual brick wall. Procurement buys stuff, sales, marketing look after the end customers. And it's like those two are completely disconnected. And that's a product of the way organizations work, in that we're organized in functional silos. Each function does its bit and they hand over to the next function. The problem is, when it comes to getting the best in terms of procurement, that failure to have things joined up means that we are very insular in what we do in procurement. It doesn't have any relationship to what the customer might want or need, or perhaps the supply chain possibilities that the customer could enjoy. So that disconnectedness is what we mean by the virtual brick wall. It's one of the biggest things that holds companies back from doing good procurement. When we do category management, supply relationship management, well, one of the key principles is driving cross-functional working. So you literally get together with those other functions, you talk to each other about a category or a supplier or an area of spend, and you think, what would good look like using those methodologies? How can we then drive change to the way we source things? But you're doing that as a joined up organization, not just procurement thinking about how it buys stuff. That's the transformational piece. So getting past that virtual brick wall is the key to doing really good procurement. How does that work in the Middle East? Well, you know, the virtual brick wall is absolutely there in Middle Eastern companies. And just because of some of the cultural differences, it's perhaps even more pronounced because of the hierarchical nature of how organizations typically exist. But equally, what also happens in the Middle East is the ability to have the right relationship and build trust are the things that take that virtual brick wall down. So the culture naturally lends itself to being able to remove that brick wall, but you've got to do the things where you start working with people, you build trust, you understand the different perspectives that people have, and you communicate. But you also need really good leadership that gives permission, and this is a key thing in a Middle Eastern country, the leadership needs to give permission for functions to start working together. So there's no risk that people will cause offense to another function by doing things that wouldn't historically be part of their job role. So it's about trust, relationships, good communication, good leadership, and then you can work on taking that virtual brick wall away.
Well answered. I think I might give you the transcript to that for your next book.
Sounds good.
Nicely done. And thank you for your question, Noura. And also, if you want to ask Jonathan a question, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, building exceptional procurement and negotiation the world over.
Jonathan, do you think this means that if, for example, the AI companies and data center companies do go down the route of building their own power stations, they're going to be in the situation that some of the power generation companies were in that they will have surplus energy, quite possibly. So will you see organizations diversifying from just being tech into also providing that excess power back into the grid and to supply local homes and communities?
We'll ask Andreas this as well, because he's the energy expert. Mm-hmm. For me, I think it depends how it's generated, because we're sort of assuming some of the traditional means and regulation would mean that's not open to some companies. But if we then have next generation of energy, which may be renewables, but it may also be something else that we don't have yet, if we're able to get nuclear fusion generators yep. online, then we might have the situation where somebody builds those and has surplus, I think. I think it depends on the technology. But Andreas, what's your view?
If I had the answer, I probably solve the energy crisis in the world. But I can tell one funny story from, I think it's the 1960s or 70s. I don't know how relevant it is, but it's still a funny story that they were kind of brainstorming what to do with surplus energy. And one of the ideas was actually to have electricity heated highways through the country.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think that is something that we will see in the future. But coming back to your question, probably much smarter energy grids. That's one necessity. Being able to benefit from surplus in one area and increase demand in another. And we can also see, for example, with ethanol, that the surplus heat that is generated from the data centers is then transformed back into either the district heating. So, for example, the data center we have here in Stockholm, we are next door to a district heating company. So we can feed back the surplus heat. Also, if we see, for example, the reference design for a new data center in Denmark, then the surplus heat will be also, among other things, used for warming up the grow houses, right?
Yeah. Greenhouses.
Yes. Greenhouses, exactly. So basically using the data centers to grow tomatoes.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And in Iceland, this has been something that's been done for many, many years, but it's using geothermal
energy, we're actually doing that in one of our data centers as well. Mm.
Now, Andreas, I'm in a unique position with you, dear sir, because as you know, at the end of these mm-hmm. interviews, we'd like to ask for the top three takeaways.
Yeah.
But I've already had them from you because you're appearing for the second time. So you're now giving your top three additional takeaways. So we've had six takeaways from you in total after this question.
It's a little excessive.
It is, really. But, you know, nevertheless, based on our conversations and indeed your new position, and congratulations, by the way, on that, what are your top three takeaways, please?
The data center industry is really the industry to be in if one wishes to work in a dynamic and growing and fun industry. And the second takeaway is that the need for speed and focus on cash flow prevents us, procurement, from working in traditional ways. And we have the opportunity to develop cutting-edge processes that can transform procurement for future generations. And then last but not least, with the data sector growing so quickly, it's likely to see that this industry will lead the development in many disciplines and not only procurement, as we have seen in the past, for example, within automotive or retail industry.
It's so refreshing to be able to do a podcast where we're talking about procurement, leading the charge up into the future and, you know, everything, you know, really accelerating and getting better rather than kind of, we've got to cut back, we've got to save money. So it's been an absolute pleasure.
And I tell you what, I bet you he never runs out of disk space either.
I do.
No.
Andreas Tagas, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you on again. Thank you.
Thank you, as always. Pleasure on my side.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Negotiating is a bit like building muscle. Without the muscle, you won't get the results. But the more you train, the stronger you get. And before you know it, you'll be the strongest. Build your negotiation muscle today. Train your team in Red Sheet Negotiation and watch them win.
Yes.
Visit Red Sheet Negotiation and find out how the top-performing companies negotiate.